Full Story is supported by Telstra. Big ambitions need the right partner, and that's where Telstra comes in. Telstra works with enterprise and government organisations across Australia to help them build, connect, and grow at scale. They support real outcomes, from secure business growth to connecting schools to networks that help keep communities safe. Telstra is a long-term partner for organisations with complex needs and big plans. Together builds better, wherever they go. For enterprise-sized solutions, partner with Telstra.
Ariel, Nino, welcome to Full Story. You've been looking into police use of what's known as less lethal weapons in Australia. Can you begin by explaining what falls into that category?
Certainly. So the so-called less lethal category includes a range of tools that police have these days across the country. They might include OC spray. This is capsicum spray, you know, gets into people's eyes, really gives that severe burn. There are things called baton rounds and beanbag rounds. They're forms of projectiles that are, I suppose, an alternative to firearm use. There are tasers, and there are also what are called distraction devices. So these are items that can be thrown. They create a loud noise. They might let off OC spray themselves or other kinds of explosive elements. So it's a broad range of tools. And I suppose when we've been looking into this category, the term less lethal has been criticised by a lot of lawyers and advocates that we've spoken to, because although they're couched in that term as an alternative to lethal force in the form of perhaps a firearm, they can cause really significant harm and even death, depending on how they're used.
Nino, I'm curious to ask you, before we get into what you've found or some of the criticisms of the use of these weapons, some people would have heard the term non-lethal be used to describe weapons used by law enforcement. Does that cover the same kinds of weapons?
It seems they are somewhat used interchangeably. So there's certain weapons the force have got now that they say are non-lethal or less lethal. And I guess the reason they say that is to almost justify where they sit on what's called the force continuum. So they like to think right at the sort of, I guess, the start of that might be what they call hands-on policing or even verbal commands. They consider a use of force in some police forces across the country. And then obviously at the other end of that, you've got the use of firearms. And so what we've kind of been exploring is that between those two poles, if you like, there's all these other little weapons that are coming into police arsenal these days, and some of them are called less lethal and some of them are called non-lethal, but they're still on that continuum of a use of force that police has and can use against people they come across.
And can cause harm and danger. In what circumstances are police in Australia allowed to use or carry less lethal weapons, Ariel?
So different police forces have different what they call use of force handbooks. And I think what really got us interested in this topic was this steady drumbeat of protest, I suppose, here in Australia and the police response. We started to see social media posts of, you know, different items that police were holding. We saw videos of people being pepper sprayed at protests in Melbourne. And that got us kind of curious about this category of less lethal, like, how is it being used? What tools do police have? And we found really there's been very little public debate or accountability about the rollout of these tools among Australian police. If you look back at the history when OC spray, pepper spray was introduced in the 80s and 90s, it was really couched as a new police wonder weapon that would mean they did not have to turn to firearms or lethal force or, you know, even physical violence when faced with a violent threat themselves or in a situation where violence was threatened on other people. But we've seen its use kind of creep out of that narrow category into a kind of protest policing tool. And then there are all the other types of weaponry police have now as well.
Mm. Nino, we've seen in the United States these weapons are used by law enforcement, particularly at protests. In 2020, they were used at the protests following the killing of George Floyd. And I believe at the time there were reports that said some 30 people were left with permanent impairments, including blindness, because they were hit in the head with these bullets. Have we seen the same kind of injuries at protests in Australia?
Probably not the number, but we're certainly seeing a consistency in terms of the type of weaponry that's being used here and in the US and in some of those injuries. So we are aware of cases where people have been left with, you know, really serious, you know, wounds or bruises from foam baton rounds or beanbag rounds that were caught, that were at protests and that were shot with those weapons and were left quite severely injured. We've done some reporting around the use of a device known as a stinger grenade, which is effectively, you know, as the name would suggest, a grenade that can be thrown by police towards protesters and explode and project little rubber pellets. There's also a version of that that deploys a CS or, you know, an OC spray gas. So we have seen cases though of people being, you know, having issues with their sight or having eye injuries. We've had instances as well of people losing, you know, hearing temporarily or being stunned by the use of police weapons. So there's basically been a gradual increase in the type of weapons police use and the type of injuries that they cause to people. It's not like it used to be when you see, you know, for example, anti-Vietnam War protests and police are hoeing into protesters with batons. We've now got an instance where if there's a big protest in Melbourne or Sydney, that police might be carrying things that look like grenade launchers that fire these foam baton rounds. They might be holding things that are grenades for all intents and purposes. There's such a wide range of things that police can do now if there's a case of disorder, I suppose.
Well, just to build off what Nina was saying there, something like pepper spray, I think we might have an idea of that as something you can carry in your bag, you know, people might have that, especially in the US, for a form of self-protection. But just to point out that the kind of OC spray that police carry, they're more like these large canisters that spray a really sticky kind of foam, and it gets all over your face and eyes and clothing and everything you've carrying with you on that day. So when we were speaking to a range of different protesters who had been hit by this OC spray, they described the kind of debilitating pain. There was in fact a class action brought against Victoria Police for their use of OC spray at a 2019 climate change protest. And the key plaintiff there won last year. So the judge in that case awarded the person who had been hit with OC spray $54,000 in damages for unlawful battery by police. And he described in that case the kind of pain it caused him, but also the long-term psychological harm that being hit in that way caused him. And it was interesting too to see in that case the way the police described their use of OC spray. They described it as a kind of means of obtaining compliance, I guess, when moving through a crowd and trying to effect an arrest. But there was a lot of discussion by lawyers on both sides about whether that was an appropriate use of force.
Mm. You've both mentioned just how opaque some of the rules around the use of these weapons are. I wonder, as you've been interrogating this issue, if you've been able to access any data about how often, how frequently these projectiles or other forms of weapons, less lethal weapons, are used, or if there have been any deaths or injuries, has that been a challenge to get your hands on that data?
Yeah, I think one thing that struck both Nino and I in reporting on these tools is the lack of transparency and accountability around even what tools police have in their arsenal, let alone how often they're using it. So after a protest, police often announce how many people they've arrested, but they don't do any kind of accounting publicly of how many times force was used. And we tried to get some of this data in New South Wales. We did get overall use of force statistics from 2017-18 to the last financial year. So we found that OC spray was used almost 900 times in New South Wales in the last financial year. Of course, there's a lot of issues with use of force statistics because they are self-reported, and also there were entire categories missing, we found. So we know that New South Wales police have used projectiles, this category of kind of foam baton rounds or beanbag rounds, but all that was not included in these use of force statistics they gave us.
So we've been discussing the use of force in the context of protests, but you've also been looking at three Australian cases. All happened within months of one another back in 2023, where these weapons were used and the outcome was fatal. Nino, can you tell me what happened in the case of Mark Smith?
Yeah, so Mark Smith had, you know, quite an extensive history with police. He had been involved in sort of siege-like scenarios before in his home. And, you know, police were called to his property sort of on the southeastern outskirts of Melbourne back in July 2023. And he was ready for them, effectively. You know, he wanted them to call the critical incident response team, which is a more sort of tactical unit of Victoria Police. They have access to more of these less lethal forms of weaponry than general duties officers. And when they were called, they effectively got in a siege situation with Mark, and they eventually stormed his property, and he was shot 5 times with what we can describe as less lethal rounds, and also 14 times with a taser. And he lost consciousness while he was under a riot shield that those CERT officers placed on top of him, and then he died. And so I was looking at his inquest, and as I was sort of piecing together the timeline of his death, we sort of realized that there were 2 other deaths within a sort of same kind of 4-month period where there similarly had been the use of tasers and less lethal rounds. There were multiple different factors that could have caused the death. The coroner is not saying that Mark Smith has definitely died because he was shot 5 times with less lethal rounds or because he was shot 14 times with a taser, but that is one of the factors that are being considered as part of this inquest, along with he'd used quite a lot of ice that day, the drug ice, and he also had issues with his heart. So we're not necessarily saying here, we're not seeing necessarily a pattern that police are causing these deaths because of how they use their weapons. What we're trying to explore is, were there alternatives? What else could have been done? And what are coroners, or even in some cases, Supreme Court civil cases, the police getting sued, what are they going to uncover about the policies and practices that are in place to control how these weapons are used?
And just 2 months after that incident, there was another death involving the use of these weapons. Can you tell me about Krista Cash?
So this was a woman in New South Wales in 2023 who was having what her family called a major mental health crisis. Police attended this residence where she was. There was a long kind of standoff into the night. And eventually when police entered the premises, they tasered her and hit her in the chest with a beanbag round from what's called a super shotgun. And there has been a coronial inquest. We're still waiting for the report to come. The post-mortem report described the cause of death as a gunshot wound to the chest. And in the wake of that, the police, you know, immediately did make comments talking about how they were going to pause the use of this beanbag style round from the super shotgun. But they have, in fact, from what I understand from some parliamentary records, begun to use it again with certain distance restrictions. So again, we'll see what the inquest decides about what happened in that case, whether there was sufficient police policy around the use of these tools, and what, if any, changes need to be made.
I thought it was interesting. One lawyer that you spoke to said there was, according to them, quote, zero oversight over this type of weaponry. Is that the case, Ariel? Nino?
Yeah, look, I think when we sort of talk about the lack of clarity around how police are using these things, there's kind of 3 main areas that I think are problematic. Number one is where they're getting these weapons from, who supplies them, how much they cost, why they've chosen certain models over others. None of that is known publicly. It's very hard to get any information at all about who supplies these weapons, how many of them they have, and how much it costs. The second sort of issue that I think we have around the lack of clarity when it comes to these weapons is how they are used, you know, so how often, what policies and procedures are in place, when they can't be used, and specifically, you know, what happens if that's breached, so the penalties that police could face. And the third is what happens when something does go, you know, badly wrong. What sort of remedial work do police do internally to make sure it doesn't happen again? Have there been officers reprimanded for repeated misuse of taser? And also when there's civil cases, so when the police force are sued for how they've used these weapons, where are the outcomes of those? And what we've sort of found is that at every step of those 3 tiers, it is very difficult to get information on what's happening.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's by design. At every level, you've got a lack of transparency there, when really we're talking about, you know, publicly funded officers with publicly funded weapons using them against the public.
We'll be right back.